another episode of Listen, Learn, and Love. Welcome to another episode of Listen, Learn, and Love, hosted by Richard Osler. My guest on today's podcast is my friend William Sintel. Welcome to the podcast.
Oh, thank you so much, Richard. Thank you. I'm so grateful to be here. Thank you for inviting me here.
We're really glad to have you. Just a background on Williamson. He is 26 year old. He is grew up in Haiti, survived the Haiti earthquake, and we'll talk about that. And we'll talk about his journey to join the LDS Church and eventually serve a mission. We'll talk about other members of his family joining the church. We'll talk about him making his way to the United States, being married to Sharla. They have one kid, one young son, and you have one on the way, Williamson?
Yes, we have one coming up, coming soon, July 22nd.
July of 2019. So we're recording this in March. So in a few months, you're going to have two.
Yep.
Williamson has started an organization called Arise, which is a humanitarian effort to help the people of his native country, Haiti. And it's a remarkable thing that you're doing at age 26. So we want to talk about that in the podcast and the good work you're doing there. That's one of the things that drew me to your story. Not only your story of surviving this terrible earthquake, finding the church, but then turning this back and serving your fellow countrymen who have so many needs. So welcome to the podcast. Williamson offered a wonderful prayer before we started. Coincidentally, after my Friday temple shift in the Salt Lake Temple, I was in the parking lot. And then I've never met Williamson, but I met you and I thought, that's Williamson. And it was just, I think you were on your way to the temple.
Yeah, I was on my way. I was with my wife. It was on Women's Day, right?
It was on Women's Day.
Yeah.
So, and before we started on the podcast, my wife, who's visited with Williamson, and before we started, she said, I know that guy from somewhere. And I go, have you read his story? No, I've seen him somewhere. And so then we kind of put it together. She watched the B1 celebration, and you were a big part of that.
Yeah, I was part of this, yeah.
So, and then she has, our family's very connected to Operation Underground Railroad, and you're very connected to that organization. I think we've seen you on that documentary.
Yeah, I work several times with Tim Ballard. He's such a great man. He's one of my mentor. So, I love him.
So that's an overview of the podcast. It fits in our story of Listen, Learn, and Love, and I'm anxious to learn a little bit more about. I've really never talked to anybody from Haiti. I'm very aware of that earthquake. I'm kind of an earthquake junkie. And when that happened, I thought this is a devastating earthquake in a country that doesn't have that infrastructure to deal with that. So, and our high school is very involved in refugees. My wife is the PTA president, and Cottonwood High School in Salt Lake City is less than 50% Caucasian. And we love that for our Caucasian kids. Because of the diversity it gives them, the perspective of the real world, and the chance to fulfill their baptism covenants to mourn, comfort, and bear. So that's just a little bit of a sidetrack. But take us back to Haiti. Take us back to that day of the earthquake. Just take us back to that terrible day in your life.
Yeah,
and maybe that's really hard.
Yeah, this is a hard experience for me to share, and that's something I have to share, you know, because this experience helped me to understand that we all have a purpose in life. Because, Brother Richard, I was 16 when the earthquake happened. I was young, and I didn't know much about earthquake. I remember it was a Tuesday. I was in high school, and usually my mom can pick me up like 5 o'clock really late because I had to stay to do homework together with my classmate. And that day, she felt that she needs to come pick me up that day. She has never done that before. She felt that she needs to come pick me up for my high school. And then she came and she picked me up. And I dropped in the car. I didn't ask her, why, mom, why do you come pick me up? She drove me to my dad's orphanage. She dropped me off to my dad's orphanage. While I was there with 12 kids, that was my job, working in the orphanage, working in my parents' orphanage. While I was there with 12 kids, the building started shaking. And I didn't know what was going on. And the building collapsed on top of all of us.
Concrete building?
Yeah, concrete building, 3-story of building. We're on the bottom floor. But right before the building collapsed, there was one boy, a little boy standing next to me. I felt that I need to grab him, and I grabbed him, and he was underneath me. And the other 11 kids, they were screaming, and I was doing the same thing too. We all were screaming. And I didn't know much about earthquake. I didn't know what was going on. We spent the night. But in the middle of that night, I heard a voice came to my mind and said, stop screaming. Tell the kids stop screaming, because the more they scream, the more tired they get, and they're going to die. And I quit screaming. And I said to the kids, stop screaming. And they didn't want to stop. They didn't want to stop. They were too scared to stop. And the next day, I didn't hear any of them. I heard them stop screaming in the middle of the night, one by one, because they were slowly dying.
Wow.
And I couldn't do anything about it. Anything. I couldn't do anything about it. And I was stuck where I was. And the next day, I heard people, they're looking for their own family. And I...
Could you tell it was day? Was there light coming in, or was it just dark where you were trapped?
No, it was dark the whole time.
So you couldn't see any daylight.
Exactly.
So you just knew it was day because time had passed.
Exactly. Because that night, I knew that I wasn't going to make it. I wasn't going to make it because I was too far from people to hear me. And because all of us, we spent the whole night screaming. No one could hear us. And the next day, I started hearing people. And they're looking for their own family members. I heard my dad's voice. He's looking for us. But
So your dad was not in the school. He was outside of the orphanage. I mean, the orphanage.
He was outside. And my family, my friends, they were outside.
So you're the only family member in the orphanage.
Inside of that
orphanage.
And
you're the oldest trapped.
I was there. And I don't know what to do. And I felt like I need something better than just screaming. I need something else. I grew up Catholic. I didn't know much about God. Like, relationship with God for me wasn't strong and sincere, because I just grew up going to church and that's all. And that day, I felt like I need to say a prayer. For the first time of my life, I felt that I need to say a prayer. Sincere prayer. And I remember I said to God, if you save me, I'm going to serve you. And I didn't know how. I just felt that's something I need to say right now. That's something I need. And right after I said that prayer, Brother Richard, I didn't feel any heavy stuff on my back anymore. I felt someone, a skin, an angel, someone was on top of me. I started feeling someone. And that's when I received enough strength to use my voice back again so that people could hear me.
Wow.
And then I started using my voice, and it's getting dark. It's getting dark again. I was under that building for 27 hours.
27 hours.
And at the end of that day, that's when they started hearing me. My parents could hear me now, and they were on top of me. They didn't have any tractor, anything to get me out easy and faster. So what they have to do, they had to dig from the top to the bottom so that they could see me.
Are there any government or authorities? Are you kind of just on your own, your family on your own to rescue you?
Oh, yeah.
Because I think us in the States think we can call 911 and the local fire department will be there, but the whole country's just devastated. And so I assume the people that are digging for you are just people that know you and people that know people in that school and don't have any machinery, like you're saying, except the tools they can get their hands on.
The neighbors, they help them. You have neighbors support, but not really the government, you know, the leaders. That's one thing Haiti needs to work on, you know, because while I was under that building, they didn't have anything to get me out. And they have to dig. They spend the whole night again. And at the end, they were able to see where I was. And then they sent a rope to tie on my neck to get me out. And that was the minute. I was a minute away from dying.
Wow.
If they had to wait for one more minute, I wasn't going to make it. And right after they rescued me, they rescued the other boy that was underneath me. And like I said, the other 11 kids, they died.
So the young man underneath you lived?
Yeah, he lived. So right after they rescue me, I find out that my 25 classmate, my best friend that was in the school that my mom can pick me up, all of them died that same day.
Wow.
And yeah.
So everybody at the school died. Everybody at the orphanage died, but you and this young boy that were with you.
Yeah, I was the only one. I didn't know how, and I didn't know why I was the only one, but I felt like the Lord has something for me.
Who did you see first as you came out into the light? I guess, I don't know if it was still light. Who did you see first?
When I get out this building?
Yeah.
I saw my dad's face.
As a dad, I can't imagine what that would be like.
Yeah, I saw my dad's face. My mom wasn't there because she thought that I was gone. And what happened is my mom went somewhere and sit in front of a church. I didn't know what kind of church. And while she was sitting in front of the church crying to God, she heard a voice said, "Go get your kids. You're going to see him again." And she left that church and she came the morning they were going to get me out. And she was there too.
Wow.
Not only I made a promise with God that if he saved me, I am going to serve him. But God also made a promise to my mom that he is going to give me back to my mom.
How badly injured were you, Williamson?
My right arm was broken.
Uh-huh.
And they have to break it again to fix it. And then my wrist couldn't move anymore, my left wrist.
Uh-huh.
So, and I had a bunch of rocks in my head. They had to get those things out.
Did they have any anesthetic, or they just did this?
They just did that, and I felt every single thing they did. Because during the earthquake, if you can't get someone out, you have to either break or cut the part that was left under that building. Like, a lot of people miss their foot, their arm, because if you really want them, you need to leave something behind. Like, you leave to cut some part.
And there's stuck. No heavy machinery to lift.
Nope.
It's just practicality. So yeah. Did you almost die anyway? And did you want to live? Or were, because it's just, Haiti's in a terrible situation with food and water and no infrastructure. It's not like you got rescued and you went into a 5-star hotel.
Yeah.
Williamson.
So right after the earthquake, that's another part. Right after the earthquake, we didn't have any water, any food to survive. I live in a tent with my family because our home was destroyed. We were living in a tent for years, let's say for over a year. But for me, that was the beginning of something greater, much better for my life. That was the beginning.
Why? Tell us that story.
Because I felt like I must be alive for some reason. I must be alive for some reason. And the fact that God hear my prayer, this experience helped me to understand that I am child of God and that he hears my prayer. It might take long, but my answer came quick, and that I'm not alone. And I knew that. I knew I must be alive for some reason. That's when I went back to school. I had to work hard in high school and I graduated at the top of my class. I had to make the most of my life because I had to do something with my life.
So you didn't forget this promise, Williamson?
I didn't. I keep seeking for ways to serve God. And right after the earthquake, I was inside of my tent. This boy keep passing by, walking by, and I stop him. And I said, "How can I help you?" And he said, "I heard you playing some music. I would like to hear what kind of music." And I invite him to come inside. While he was inside, my mom was making some coffee, and then she gave him some, and he said, "No, I'm a Mormon, I don't drink coffee." And right after this conversation, he was about to leave. I said, "Where are you going?" He said, "I'm going to my church activity." That was on Friday. And I said, "What kind of activity?" He said, "You can come if you want." And I asked my mom, and she said, "Yes, you can come." And my mom, I grew up, I've never had a friend before the earthquake. I only have time to study. I didn't have time to even watch TV only on Saturday. So for my mom to let me go hang out with this guy means a lot to me. And I went to the church, and then I saw everybody keep calling me by my name. And I didn't know why. This guy already texts his young man president, and they all know my name. And that's when I keep looking for ways to serve God. And 6 months later, I joined the church.
Did you know anything about the Mormon church before you met this young man?
I don't think I did.
And tell our listeners during that 6 months, what helped you be baptized? You know, was it the Book of Mormon? Was it the plan of salvation? Was it, or just a feeling from God, this is where you needed to be, or all of those?
I think that this is exactly where I needed to be. You know, right after the earthquake, when this guy introduced me to the missionaries, I knew these two men from a dream, but I couldn't remember if that was them. But I knew I met two men in a dream, like years ago, years before
the earthquake. Before the earthquake,
yeah.
You saw a dream.
Yeah. And they came over to my house. They started giving me the Book of Mormon. No, they give me a book called Restoration, a little brochure. And at the end of this brochure, there was a little book, blue book, called the Book of Mormon at the end of this brochure. And I said, can I have this book? Because I'm done with my brochure. And they said, yes, you can have it. I said, how much? They said, no, it's free. And they give me the Book of Mormon. I read the whole Book of Mormon in 3 weeks.
Wow.
Because that's all I had to do when I was home, like reading, study. And while I was waiting, I remember I was in Alma chapter 34 verse 32, talk about, behold, this day is the day to prepare to meet God. Right after Amulek finished to teach the poor people on the mountain, and then he keep explaining why they need to have hope, faith, and stuff like that. And then I said, this day is the day to prepare to meet God. And I called the missionaries because I want to know which day they're talking about. And when they came over, they said, it's today. It's the day to prepare to meet God. And I want to know, what can I do to meet him? What can I do? And they said, you need to be baptized. And I felt that was something I needed. And I got baptized on Saturday, July 17, when I was 17 years old. And on my birthday, I was born in July at 2 o'clock. I got baptized in July at 2 o'clock,
That's
July
awesome.
17. That was one of the best days of my life. And I will never regret that. And I'm so grateful to be a member of this church. I'm so grateful for the gospel, the experience I was able to learn from.
Tell our listeners how the church has blessed your life since you've been a member.
Well, the gospel blesses my life in so many ways. I will never, one of the best things that ever happened in my life was having my eternal wife, eternal companion, my wife. I felt like I could have any amazing woman in my life, but I will never have someone like my wife if I didn't take the gospel seriously, if I didn't really seek for God, you know, for the blessing. And I remember telling her that, because my wife is the biggest blessing in my life, just because of the gospel, you know, because of the promise. And I'm so grateful for that. There is a lot of blessings I receive because of the gospel, but one of them is having someone like my wife in my life.
And your wife's name is Sharla.
Yeah, she's from Centerville.
And you were married in 2016.
Yeah, we got married in October 2016.
That is great.
Yeah.
Which temple were you married in?
Salt Lake Temple.
Salt Lake Temple. Yeah. What a great day that would have been.
That was a great day. And my wedding wasn't easy for my family to come here. We had a big hurricane happen in Haiti that week, that day, for them to come here. A big hurricane. They couldn't travel. But
wow.
The Lord knows they need to be here. He made it happen. I don't know how. But all my family, siblings, parents were able to come.
Wow.
During that hurricane.
And as other members of your family joined the church, your mom or dad or siblings?
My mom, she got baptized while she's here. 5 months ago, she had a stroke. She came here and she got baptized later on. Yeah.
And any of your siblings?
Yeah, my three younger siblings, they're members, and I have one younger brother. He's serving his mission right now in Ivory Coast.
That is awesome.
Yeah.
And you can talk to him once a week, I guess.
Yeah, this is such a great blessing, you know, to be able to talk with your family every week. Yeah.
I would guess he's asking you advice on missionary stuff because you've served a mission.
Yeah, but you know what? I always have him to turn into Christ because I can't really give him advice. And I think the best person that can give a missionary advice is the Spirit.
Great answer. What a remarkable story. I'm still just thinking of you trapped, grabbing that 11-year-old young man and being in this awful earthquake for 27 hours or 29 hours. Your dad, and I'm a dad, out there wondering if you're alive, digging with bare hands and picks, finding you, and then surviving in a tent for a long time, and then finding the church. And being baptized and feeling the truthfulness of the restored gospel and how it can bring you closer to Christ and help, you know, help define your life and help give you vision for your life. How did you make your way to the United States?
That was one of the hardest decisions I've ever done, like coming here. I remember right after my mission, I decided to come here. I knew I had to be here. That's how bad I want to come to your country, Brother Richard.
We're glad you're here.
Thank you. I wanted to study at BYU Idaho. That was one of my dreams, and I want to live close to a temple. And I prayed about it. I felt that was the right thing to do. But my dad wanted me to go to Cuba to study, become a doctor. But I wanted to come here. And I came here without any English, any money to survive.
Wow.
And I barely had a place to stay. And I came with a smile on my face. That was all. That was it. And I remember I had to study really hard on my English. I was living at my bishop's house while I was working on my English. I also sworn myself with some really good friends who helped me progress. And one of them become my beautiful wife today. I also think that, like, the people you surround yourself will determine where your life's going to be in the next 5 years. And that was one of the things that I did will help me be where I am today. And I did rely on God a lot, more than anyone.
Did you come to Salt Lake, to Provo?
I came to Salt Lake.
You came to Salt Lake, so you lived here in Salt Lake.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And yeah, I made some really good choices. And they really changed my life.
And I know you're at LDS Business College right now, perhaps going to Utah State, studying international studies and working to help fund all that. And you're in the middle of this stage of being stretched financially, I would guess, and making decisions for the future, like trying to get your education done. But you've also managed to put together this organization called Arise that we're going to talk about in a second. I had another question for you, but I can't remember it, Williamson. It's sort of, did you feel welcome when you came to Utah? You're black. Did you feel any racial prejudice when you came to Utah?
To be honest with you, I didn't.
Good.
And even if they did, I will never see that because I was to focus on seeing the good part of where I want to be, and I didn't have time for that. Because I've been through a lot to be where I am today. I don't think by the way people will treat me will stop me from where I need to be in life. Because people will always treat you somehow. But the way you respond is, that's what matters. You know, I didn't. And if they did, I didn't see that.
Good for you. Good for you. That's a great answer. As some of our listeners know, we had the B1 celebration in our church, and you were a part of that. And that's one of the things my wife remembers about that, because she watched that with tears in her eyes. Tell us about how you got involved in the B1 celebration and what that is.
Well, I was on my way to my wife's cabin with all the boys going to go shooting on a weekend, and I received that text from a 70. And
that's kind of scary.
Yeah, I'm not going to mention his name. Everybody knows him. And he said, hey, I'm elder this, and I got assigned by the first presidency to invite you to be part of something. Can you meet me at my office tomorrow at 2 o'clock? I said, yes. And the next day I met him, and then he said, okay, we are going to have the 40th anniversary of the Black holding the priesthood. We contact your temple president, President Samuelson, was the temple president at that time. And we have your contact, and we would like to know if you'd like to be part of something like this. And I said, I can't deny that. I can't say no. I would love that. And that's when I started. And then my first day, I was able to be around all the 12 apostles. We were working together from 1 to 11 o'clock. We had such a great time together for 2 weeks. And that was one of the best moments in the way they wrap up everything to make this happen. That was truly the Lord's hand.
What a wonderful experience to be with our church leaders, Williamson and C. That's a very unusual experience, as you know, but I think God is giving you wonderful, unusual experiences to just be able to do now what you want to do and to be a part of the B1. Talk about the spirit you felt at the B1 celebration. Was there a highlight for you?
I quiet every single day during my rehearsal.
So every rehearsal was just a highlight.
Every rehearsal was.
And you were narrating.
Yeah. And it's like.
Did you dance? Did you speak?
Speak. Everything I said was brought tears to my eyes. And I like telling the story of Jane Manning. How hard it was for her and how dedicated she was to like even write the prophet to tell him that. Talk about the priesthood, how she knows that she can't live her life without the blessings of the priesthood. I always think, like, for me, imagine if I didn't have the opportunity to have the priesthood. I will never be able to have my wife for eternity. That would be a sad experience for me. Like, for me, having the opportunity to have the priesthood helped me to understand that, yeah, I am part of the Lord's kingdom. Yes, he chose me, and yes, he wants me to do something, and he wants me to use his power to help and bless other people's life. For me, it helps me to understand how much God really wants us to be part of his kingdom. Yeah.
I like that, and I think there's members of our church that joined our church after that 40 years and some that joined before. And did you interact with any that joined the church before they could have the priesthood? Did you meet many of our members?
I met a couple of them, and I also saw so many comments from them, you know. But, you know, it's the Lord's timing. It's the Lord's timing. So the church is a church of revelation. That means everything came from heaven. Everything came from heaven. Once we believe that, we will just follow what God wants us to do.
Some of the most faith, I remember meeting Darius Gray, and maybe you know Darius, too,
yeah.
And him joining the church, I think, in the 60s, and he's been, like you and Jane Manning and others, real pioneers in my mind for joining the church and having this great testimony of the church and hanging in there. And so I love the B1, and to me, it makes me want to be like some of those people that just, you know, we're able to stay, even though it was hard at times. And Jane Manning's story is complicated.
And it's still hard, you know? Like, coming here from Haiti, it's not like it's easy to be in a ward. It's not like it's easy to be a member.
Yeah.
But once you have a testimony of knowing that you're a child of God, nothing can stop you.
I assume that if that earthquake hadn't happened, your life would be very different, Williamson.
Horrible.
You know, your life, the lessons you've learned and the perspective it's given you is part of your life mission. I don't think you'd be here without that earthquake.
Me either. I can't imagine my life without the things I've been through, without not having a savior who knows how it feels, who knows it all. You know, I can't imagine my life without that.
Talk about Arise. A-R-I-S-E, I think.
Yeah, Arise Project for Humanity. I started this nonprofit with my wife. I had that idea like way before I came here. I really want to do something for my country, but I didn't know how. I didn't know how. And I started sending clothes to Haiti. And I felt, no, that's not the right way to serve your country. And my wife and I, we started Arise together. We said, okay, because I really want to make a difference in Haiti. But for me, I grew up in Haiti. I've seen people bring stuff all the time, but nothing happened. We want to give Haitians something that will help them create something for themselves instead of expecting things from other people. I don't know if you read this book.
Love that.
Yeah, I don't know if you read this book called When Helping Hurts.
No.
I would love you to read it. It's like they explain how sometimes we keep helping people, we're hurting them.
Because we're not teaching them.
Exactly. So that's why one of the words we love using is assist Haitian. We are teaching Haitians how they can become victor in life, how they can change the way they see themselves. Because once people change the way they see themselves, what's going to happen? They're going to change their life. So Arise, what we're doing through the mentoring program, we are teaching young people in Haiti how to become a victor in life. So this also works with sex trafficking, because once this young girl has been trafficked by her own parents or by someone, she will never think that she can be anything in life. She thinks she's an object. So with the mentoring program, the things we teach young people will help them know that they are good enough. They're wonderful. They can become anything, Brother Richard. That's something I believe. I believe that we all can become anything, anything we want in life. Anything. That's what we are doing in Haiti. So, and also through the mentoring program, we help prevent sex trafficking from happening in the first place. We teach those young people, we help them discover who they are so that they are going to be the next Haitian president. That's when they are going to make a difference.
Sex trafficking is, you know, just when I think of the evil things of the world, that is pretty far up there, Williamson.
Oh, yeah.
And I've just thought of Satan and his influence in our world. And, you know, I just can't think of anything, you know, much more evil than that. I guess just mass genocide and murder. But I just, and so what you're doing is remarkable and so needed. And I love the way you're helping people see who they are. I do believe everybody's a child of God and everybody is loved. And everybody should feel God's love and worthy of God's love. And yeah, and if you've been a victim of sex trafficking, you may not, that may be hard to believe that or see that or know that. And if you've just been an object, and so I love your word mentoring. To me, that's a positive word of somebody who's older and kind of knows the world and knows their road to be able to give them a vision of who they can become. I guess the Savior is my greatest mentor in some ways because of his earthly mission and the things that he did. So it's talk about how many times you've been back to Haiti, and just give us an idea of, because this is a pretty new organization, what you're able to accomplish so far.
Well, thanks for the question. Thank you so much. But Brother Richard, I want you to know that I will never be able to do that alone. We also have a lot of families here in Utah. We adopted kids from Haiti, who's part of what we're doing. People see Williamson, but those are the ones who's doing the work, you know? I just use my story, you know? I'm just the one that people can see, but I'm not the one doing the job. You know, I have so many wonderful people who believe in that vision, who believe in Haiti, who believe that Haitian can make a difference. And I go to Haiti every 4 months.
Every 4 months?
Yeah, every 4 months, because I have to work together with the mentors. So now we have over 17 mentoring program all over Haiti. We have 17.
17. That's great.
We have mentors teaching young people. So that what's happened is we have a 12-week program where these young people can come and learn the things that will really help change their life. And what after they finish, they're done with their, they just finish with the program. they're able to become a mentor for the young people. It's like Haitians mentoring Haitians, Haitians mentoring Haitians. Because there's a power by having a mentor, someone who can teach you, who can help you to understand your true power, tell you that you can do it. This is how I think you can do it.
Talk about your relationship with Tim Ballard and Operation Underground Railroad.
Tim is a great man. He's someone that I will admire. And I'm so grateful for Tim and the things he's done. Not only him, his team for Haiti. I met Tim 3 years ago. Let's say 2 years ago. Because Tim started in Haiti with OUR when he heard that about the young boy, Gaudi. They kidnapped this boy in Haiti. He was the bishop's son. This bishop is one of my good friends. His name is Mardi. And
So at the earthquake, he was kidnapped.
Exactly. I would say...
So the bishop never...
During that time, before, after... I would say before the earthquake. Yeah.
Okay, that's right.
And yeah, so... And then... I started being in contact with Tim. And lately, we've been working a lot together. He adopted 2 kids from Haiti. For the first 3-4 months, I was able to work with him and his wife throughout the whole journey. And we do a lot of work in Haiti and also here. Tim is someone that I can call anytime and say, hey, we're doing something. What are your thoughts? What can we do better? You know, we are going to Haiti. He's always there to support what we're doing because he knows that we can't fight sex trafficking without education. And he believes in the things that we are doing. He's always there to support us and his team. I think that what OUR is doing is something incredible that everybody should join them.
I love one of the things I love about OUR is sort of the vision it creates in all of us on what we can do. So here you've started something that's specific to Haiti, a mentoring program, but to me it's sort of part of the OUR mission. You're like an OUR spinoff. You've been mentored by OUR, and so I think that it's wonderful what OUR has done to create perhaps vision. Tim, you know, is a visionary, and he's done something that probably no one said he could done, and probably people say to you, Williamson, you can't do this. You're too young. You don't have enough experience. And I sense you don't listen to any of that. You just say, this is the God that saved me from that earthquake and brought me, you know, into this church and helped me find this wife and brought me to America. It's the same God that's going to sustain me as I go back to Haiti and help my countrymen.
Yeah, I knew that I had to do something for Haiti. When I first came here, I saw so many opportunities, Brother Richard. I knew I had to do something for Haiti. One thing we teach in the mentoring program called affirmations, we teach young people how they can really make a difference in their own life by telling themselves who they are. For me, Brother Richard, when I wake up every morning, I go in my bathroom and look at myself in the mirror. I have to affirm myself who I am, tell myself who I am. I'm positive. I'm a powerful man. I'm a success magnet. I'm wonderful. I will believe, not doubt. I will lead, not follow. I'm the voice. I'm capable. I'm a victor. I tell myself all those things every single morning. And what's happening is they go so deep inside of me, no one else will ever remove those things from me because I tell myself who I am.
Who taught you to do that?
I had a mentor. His name is Ben Kier. He's my wife's brother. This guy, one day at the airport, we're on our way to go to a wrestling tournament. And I was working for someone and he said to me, you're worth more than that. I want you, after this trip, to think about your passion. Once you find your passion, go after it. Don't give it to people. And we started working together. We do a lot of work together. And he's part of the ARISE. He's one of the ambassadors. He donated money. He's planning to go to Haiti with us. This man is one of my good examples. You might heard his story. He's from Utah. He's one of the best wrestler. He had over 15 surgeries in his face.
Wow.
And he was able to overcome all those bullying in high school.
Wow.
He's a victor in life. And he taught me those things. And not only he taught me those things, I was able to apply those things in my life, because people can teach you any great things, but if you don't apply those things in your life, nothing's going to happen. So you have to teach those things to yourself too. And I was able to do that. And this changed my whole life.
Tell us his name again.
His name is Ben Kerr, K-J-A-R, Ben.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I love the word, I hope our listeners heard it, affirmations, is that every morning in the mirror, you affirm who you are. And
yeah,
you
because,
say good things about you.
Yeah, because if you don't tell yourself who you are, no one else will. You must be the first person who tell yourself who you are. Because so many people expect great things from other people, they don't even give those things to themselves. If you want people to treat you good, like one of the questions you asked me was about black, but let me tell you, like being black has nothing to do with me. So the way people treat me has nothing to do with me. It has everything to do with them.
It's very thoughtful.
You know, because people will treat you different anytime, but what are you going to do? Are you going to be a victim or a victim? Are you going to take this and learn something from that and keep going? Or are you going to let this break you? Because we all have 24 hours. What you do in your time can either break your life or make your life. So I can't let what people say about me define who I am, because that's not who I am.
I love that. I think that applies to everybody. So in your case, it's your story as a black man, but you're kind of don't even see yourself as a black man.
Not at all. I'm brown.
You're brown.
Yeah.
And you're a child of God, and that's not defining you. And I think that's good for all of us too, as we move forward in life. And I love this sort of deep sense of self-awareness of who you are, and a deep sense of, you know, who you are, and not being too influenced by the opinions of others, and having this very strong self-focused control that you can sort of chart your own destiny. And I think that's part of the gospel of Jesus Christ. I think it's the way Heavenly Father wants all of us to see us as a son of God. And that's one of the most powerful doctrines in our church, Williamson, is this idea that because we are sons and daughters of God, you know, that sort of opens the door to just unlimited, you know, love from them and an unlimited chance to accomplish things. It's a pretty powerful doctrine if you've never thought of yourself that way. How can people get involved in Arise? So let's say some of our listeners say, boy, I'd really love to help the people of Haiti. How can they get involved?
Just come be part of what we're doing, you know?
How do they find you? What's your web address?
We have a website, ariseprojectforhumanity.com. They can go on the website. They can contact us. They will find phone numbers, emails through the website. We have a 5K coming up at Liberty Park where people can come and run for Haiti, bike for Haiti. And all these funds will be used to help build our mentoring center in Haiti, which is a place where young people will come and learn these things, those things that will really change their life forever.
And so I'm going to read that web address, arise.projectforhumanity.com. Is that right?
Ariseprojectforhumanity.com.
And or you could Google that, I'm sure, Arise Project for Humanity.
Yeah.
If you don't remember the web address. And
there's a lot of ways people can be part of that. You can come to Haiti with us to see what we're doing in Haiti. We have a trip coming up in August. We have a gala coming in June for Children's Day, International Children's Day.
And that gala is here in Utah?
Yeah, it's here in Utah.
And August is the Haiti temple dedication?
Yes. Yeah.
What is that going to be like for you to go to Haiti for a temple dedication in your home country?
It shows me that God really knows his people and is watching over us. He knows that Haitians are ready. They need something like that. Imagine having a temple, a mentoring center in Haiti. A place not only where young people can come and learn, but also members can go and make eternal covenants with God.
The mentoring center is a physical location you're trying to put together. Do you have that now, or are you trying to build that?
We have the land.
You have the land?
We're in the process of purchasing the land this week, actually. Yeah, and wow. Then we'll be in Haiti in 3 weeks. That's the time where we'll be able to sign up all the papers.
I'm just struck with what you've started here, Williamson. You're 26, I think.
Yeah, I'm old.
You're old, but you know, some people would say you can't do something like that at your age, or you should be. I love the way you're working on your own school, you're having child number two, you have a wonderful marriage, but you're finding the time to go back to Haiti and developing out this mentoring program.
Yeah, because that's my passion, you know? That's my passion. I want to see another Haiti. It's time, you know? I want to see another Haiti. I want to see a Haiti where, like, people knows who they are. People can really make a difference. We can have better government, better leaders. That's what we are doing. We are trying to create better leaders. It's time. It's not like corruption. We are going to stop corruption, but we are going to create better leaders. Once they get there, they will truly make a difference. And I think it's time now for people to not only make a difference, but be the difference.
Talk about hope, because some people would look at a situation like Haiti, and I don't really know, but there's probably just significant problems.
Yeah.
And so some people would say, I just don't have hope that things could ever change. It's too overwhelming. So how do you maintain hope, and how do you give hope to others?
If I can be where I am today, anybody can. And if anybody can, any country can. So I believe that, Brother Richard. I have no doubt that Haiti will change. But this must first start with Haitians. Not you, but me. Once Haitians knows who they are, that they truly can make a difference, because they don't know that they can make a difference. That's what we are trying to do, to teach them. Tell them, yes, you are going to make a difference. Yes, you can make a difference. Once you know you can make a difference, you will make a difference. Once
That's
you know
cool.
better, you do better. So there is hope. There is hope. Haiti will change. Haiti will change. This might take time, but it will change one child at a time.
I love the way your focus is on the young people. The mentoring program is not focused on people at my age. I'm 58, Williamson. I guess if I came, you'd give me some tips, but I do love the focus on young people and giving them a vision for who they are and what they can accomplish. And I try to pretend I'm a Haitian right now, that I'm 12 years old, and maybe I've been sex trafficked, and I just don't know. I have no vision for my life. But then I meet you or one of your fellow mentors or somebody who's just filled with light and hope and the gospel of Jesus Christ and a confidence. And I would think that could really make a difference for me. And I could, because I think I'm probably looking for hope. I'm still a child of God, even though I've been dimmed with who I am. And I would think that you can unlock that in a young person and give them a feeling. Because of your own life story, there's something that builds hope when you know someone who's sort of been in your road and has gone through really difficult things like you have with the earthquake. And so that, you know, I use this quote sometimes in the podcast, the wounded healer is someone that can authentically lead because he knows the desert. And you kind of know the desert of the difficult situations in Haiti. So you can authentically give people vision and hope. And I think that's a wonderful gift.
Thank you. Thank you.
Anything else you'd like to just share with our listeners, Williamson?
First, I want to thank you. I want to thank you because what you're doing, you're not just inviting someone to be here and share the story. You're changing lives, because I know somebody somewhere wants to hear my story. Somebody somewhere wants to hear my story. And it's not only just being in the podcast, it's also your story, because we all have a story. Only you own your story, no one else. Somebody wants to hear your story. And once they hear your story, once they're able to listen to your story, they will realize they have something better within them to change their life forever.
I love that. Everybody has a story. Everybody's a child of God. Everybody's of infinite worth. That is such the doctrine of our church. We have the Pool of Bethesda painting hanging up in our podcast room. I talk about it, but in this painting, Christ is sort of around everybody that society says isn't worthy to be around, or kind of the broken people by represented by sort of physical infirmity, but he's with all those people and he's giving them vision. And he's kind of drawing us to them and saying, what's our responsibility to lift burdens and mourn and comfort? And I sort of look at my baptism covenants, Williamson, as, and I've shared this in the podcast, vertical, meaning my relationship with God. So that's a line that goes upward. It's my relationship with God and commandment keeping. But then another part of my baptism covenant goes sideways. It's horizontal, and it's where all the other people are. And I look about what's my responsibility to help other people. And I can't help everybody. I think we all recognize that we have there's time we can do more and time we can do less. But I certainly think that's part of the gospel of Jesus Christ, is our responsibility to lift other people's burdens. And then the older that I get, the more when I go horizontal and lift burdens, then almost that line between me and God is easier. It's easier for me to keep the commandments, and it's easier for me to feel closer to God. So those lines, even though I drew them kind of as separate lines, they really intersect. But I'm at the point where I read the New Testament now, and I don't look for a trivia thing. I don't look for, you know, how can this help me? I still need to do that to be a better person. I don't want to say that's not important, but I mostly look at is what does this give me insights in how to help other people? You know, the Sermon on the Mount and some of the teachings there. Sure, I need to internally work on my own self, but what is Christ trying to teach me about my responsibility, my fellow men and women? And that's where I love, you know, I think God set it up so that we need each other. And so I love Operation Underground Railroad. I love One Refugee, another organization that many of our families in, and I love what you're doing at The Rise. And sometimes then I just want to close my eyes and think, what are you going to accomplish, Williamson, and your team and your family for Haiti? An impression came to my mind, one day could you be the temple president in Haiti? You don't want to aspire to callings, but could, you know, what's your role for the church and for the Haitian community? And what has God have in plan for you and for all of us to be able to help other people? And he set it up so that we're meant to help other people. So I'm honored to know you, Williamson. You're the kind of guy that I remember when I was interviewing some YSAs, sometimes I said, I don't have any suggestions for you. I just want you to feel my hands on your back saying, keep moving forward. Sure, we all need to improve and grow and repent, but that's the way I feel about you, Williamson, is just I want you to feel my hands at your back with so many other people and saying, you can do this. You know that, but you can do this. And you're on God's errand and you're here to be able to help people.
Thank you.
So thank you for being on the podcast. Any concluding thoughts?
No, I'm grateful for all you do. Thank you again. Thanks so much. Thank you for having me here.
Great. So I encourage everybody to follow Williamson. I'm going to mess your last name up here.
Sintil.
Sintil. So Williamson Sintil, Sintyl. He's on Facebook. We're Facebook friends, and you can sort of get a feel for what he's doing there because he talks about it on your Facebook feed, I believe. But especially connect with RISE, Project for Humanity. Check out that organization and the good work you're doing. If you feel impressed, this isn't a podcast I'm asking everybody to suddenly, you know, be involved in this, but I think if this is something you should be involved in, you'll feel impressions to do this. But I think part of this podcast is to give us all of us vision that God loves us and that he has a plan for each of us. And I love some of the things you talked about, Williamson, about affirming yourself every morning. You're very positive. And I think that's something, even though some of us may struggle with mental illness that makes it harder or depression, I do love what you do every morning. I think everybody can do that. It can help everybody grow. So thank you, Williamson, and thank our listeners for joining us on another episode of Listen, Learn, and Love. And Richard Osler signing off.